Welcome back, everybody, for a special edition of the Jackrabbit Illustrated podcast. We have a very special guest on with us tonight, Coach Ryan Olson. He is the new offensive coordinator for SDSU, the pride of Stoughton, Wisconsin, the three-time national champion for Wisconsin Whitewater, and obviously the two-time FCS champion here with the Jackrabbits. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. We'll talk to the NFL draft first. Have you talked to Mason and Garrett at all?
Yeah, I talked to all our guys. Pretty excited, as you can imagine. Yeah, pretty awesome.
For sure. Mason, he just seems like a Steeler. I feel like he's going to get right in there.
Culturally, it's a great fit. And if you've ever been to Pittsburgh, you know, it's not like a real flashy type of town, and yeah, he's I think it's a pretty good fit on that account.
Definitely. Go ahead, Chad.
No, I was just gonna say I know Kibby and Lee were up there Friday and Saturday. He was hoping to get his name called Friday. I was too, and there was rumors that it was going to be the Steelers, and I was happy because I think that, like you said, it's a great landing spot. Of all the FC teams, they're one of the ones that I don't dislike, so you know, not that that matters to him, but I think I expect him to earn a roster spot and compete for time on the field right away. I think so. I don't know, they might use him as center, you think? Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, they came out on Tuesday before the draft, so they flew their offensive coordinator and their offensive line coach to Brookings to work him out at specifically center. Which, I mean, on one hand, you know, he doesn't have any tape at center. He's done in practice at times, and he's worked on it on his own a lot. So you can understand why they'd want to see it. The one thing that I said to somebody else, I said, I've been doing this for a little while, and we've been around some good players, and we've had some good ones here. I've never seen somebody fly an OC and a position coach. Usually you get excited when they said a position coach, you know. So I have the coordinator on that side of the ball and the O-line coach come out and work with him. You knew it was really serious. And based on that, we thought, okay, this might be a day two thing if they're going to do that on 4 days before the draft, because God knows they got a lot of other stuff they would be busy with too. So you know he's a priority. And when obviously working him out at center, and that was what they told him, you know, they said, we're looking at you at that position. And then, I was just surprised seeing that they took the center on day two. You know, I thought, okay, probably could cross them off the list. And you know, we're looking at these other teams that we knew had guard needs. So to see them come back and take him, I think that tells you what they thought about him.
Well, sorry. Yeah, he played center in high school some, right? And
yeah,
being he's such a smart guy, he more or less called the offense from the guard position, didn't he? So
yeah, and everybody asked that, you know, do you think he could do it? And my answer was always, from an intellectual standpoint, cerebrally, like he already does a lot of those functions for us. You know, he played in so many games, and you know, it's not like that Gus can't do that stuff. He knows it as well as anybody. He's one of the smartest kids we've got. It's just a matter of the game experience for Mason and trying to ease, you know, into that transition 2 years ago. And it's like, why would you change it now? And so he's done all that stuff in terms of getting us oriented, making IDs, flipping protections, all those things. It's just a matter of doing it, snapping the ball, which is no easy task. I mean, it's the hardest position up front without question for that reason. But if there's a guy that could transition and do it, he's that guy.
For sure. Then we got Garrett Greenfield gets signed by the Seahawks. I do have to ask, did you know that he could jump that high?
No,
when he set that record, that was a surprise.
I mean, I knew he was explosive, and I knew they were both going to run really well, and I knew they were going to test extremely well. I did not know he was going to break a combine record. That's pretty cool. That was something, but
that was wild.
He's pretty quick for that tall of a dude, too. Like, I mean,
he's a smooth. He's one of the best naturally gifted, just fluid pass protectors I've ever been around. He's gifted. And I'm honestly, I'm shocked that he didn't get drafted. I'm still kind of salty about it. And I just see.
You expected him to be taken.
What's that?
You expected him to be taken?
Yeah, I did. I really did. And then what really kind of got me towards the end was some of the guys that came off the board ahead of him. Some of the other guys that were at the Shrine Bowl and the Senior Bowl, and it's probably not fair on my end because I'm not evaluating them and watching their tape, but you see some of the stuff on TV, Shrine Bowl, Senior Bowl, or the clips they show, and I'm obviously super biased, so it maybe is not fair. But I would say the Seahawks got an absolute steal for that price and where they got him. And I would not bet against them to make the 53 man. I would not bet against them. I don't know the Seahawks. I think they draft the one O lineman in the whole thing. So that's a decent situation too.
I was going to ask about the situation. I think they're kind of undergoing kind of a complete rebuild of their whole team/organization. So maybe that's a good situation.
Well, you hear this a lot, and I don't know how true it is sometimes, but some guys will tell you, if you're in the bottom half of the seventh round, sometimes you're better off not getting picked because then you can negotiate. Sometimes it turns into a bidding war and you get to pick your landing spot. And so, you're not going to a situation where it's an uphill climb or you can kind of, look at the roster before you make your move. So I think all that considered, he's going to be fine. And knowing him, he's going to put the chip on his shoulder and he's going to be motivated even more.
Yeah, I think Tanner Castora touched on that a little bit in his piece, the being able to sign where you want. Sorry, Ben.
No, I was going to say, moving on to Zay, he got drafted by the New York Jets. It seems like they're kind of searching for their RB2. They took a couple of running backs. Obviously, Breece Hall is going to be their main guy. But what do you think? Does Zay have a pretty good shot at getting an RB2 job there?
I mean, again, not knowing – much about Braylon Allen or or what their situation is on offense. I just would say what I know about Isaiah is that he's probably the most diligent, hardworking kid I've ever been around. He is, and I think I said this to him, on senior day, I walked up to him and I just said, you are the epitome of what a coach wants to have in a player, and it doesn't matter the position. He just does everything the right way. He is one of the hardest workers I've ever had. And it's one of those things. He's not the loudest kid. He doesn't need to say a whole lot, but his presence and just the way he goes about his business is really powerful in terms of how it kind of sets the tone for everybody else. He's the kind of guy that when he's on your team, you don't want to let him down. You can see that the guys around, they saw how he worked. Better live up to that standard. And he's just a self-made kid, coming out of high school. He had one offer to play running back, and it was here. He had an offer to play linebacker. Everybody thought, he's too big, he's too this, he's too that. And I think there's probably a little bit of that in his evaluation at the NFL level. He's a big back. Is he going to have is he durable enough? Did he run well? Everybody just, there's so many questions. I think I saw at the end of the draft or when he came off the board, I think it was Mel Kiper was saying that they had him, he was shocked that he went that low, And again, I don't know how tuned in those TV personalities are to reality, but I think they got a pretty good deal getting him in the fifth round.
Yeah, that is just wild that he didn't have any other offers at running back. I remember seeing him in his first spring game and seeing some of the runs he was doing, and I was like, and that was when we had Pierre Strong still. Yeah. And I was like, well, we've got the best two back combo in the FCS right now with Isaiah Davis. He's just a beast. And like you said, on top of that, such a nice dude. Like, he was just always a smile on his face and everything. He was just so fun to watch. And yeah, that he'll be missed. He's a jackrabbit goat. That's for sure. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know I got a little bit emotional watching that film, watching him,
Yeah.
That was pretty cool that
except the call
together with the Jets. And I'm thinking Dallas would have something to say about that too. He's just joining us, but you know, it got a little dusty in my house while I was watching that too. That was, there's a lot of emotion there, and you know, behind that emotion is all the hard work you're talking about, and it's just good to see that, Dallas. We're
welcome in, Dallas. Yeah, we're just talking about Zay and his emotional video that he posted when he accepted the call for the draft.
Oh man, I lost it. I was sitting on my front step drinking coffee, which is like my favorite thing to do as soon as the weather starts to get warm. And yeah, I mean, not that I would care, but I'm really glad no one was walking by at the time, because yeah, I completely lost it. It was awesome. I can't get over those. I love those videos so much. I mean, I've watched Mason's, I don't know how many times too. Those are great.
Agreed. So outside of that, we had also the Yankees both went to the Texans. Tanner Castora posted a cool story about how that went down. I recommend go checking that out, because it was kind of a interesting behind the scenes of how, you know, they got the calls from the different teams and stuff. And so excited for them. See if, you know, it sounds like one of them, or at least one of them, has a chance to make the active roster. The other one probably practice squad. Hopefully they can both make it. But and then outside of that, Zach Kind's going to the Chargers.
And Daishan went to the Browns.
Daishan to the Browns, and Stalbert to the Saints.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that's all. But yeah, just incredible watching or seeing all the guys get opportunities in the NFL. I don't know if you saw, Ryan, but somebody posted the it's amazing looking back at the 2021 team and how many guys are actively in the NFL now. And it's just incredible the amount of talent that's been coming through this program. I guess, remind me, when did you come to SDSU?
So I was hired in January of 21. So it was right, okay, like literally 3 weeks before we started the COVID year in the spring.
Oh, gotcha.
That was my first season, was tight end coach in the spring.
So you've seen a little bit of success in your time here.
Yeah, I got on the train, right? I mean, we were leaving the station, and I jumped on the back.
But one might say you're responsible for it. We can't prove you're not.
A lot of different ways, man. Yeah,
would your first game then?
Or coincidence, I don't know.
Sorry. Would your first game then been up in North Dakota?
My first game would have been at UNI. Oh, we were at UNI, and Pierre caught the flare out of the backfield to win the game at the very end. Zach Hines caught the screen and go down the sideline for about 40 yards, got us down to like the 5 yard line. And then we ran it like three times in a row. And then I think it's fourth down, and we threw the flare out to Pierre out of the backfield, won the game walking off the field. So pretty thrilling first game. Now, Tucker Kraft got hurt on the third play of that game, so as a tight end coach, I was like, oh, my God, here we go.
But right. Zach Larson has a question here. Any chance Freeman gets picked up by someone? He deserves a shot somewhere. He's so underrated. Do you have any inkling on that?
You know, so this process is so funny. There's like levels of, right, guys get drafted. You got guys that sign priority free agent contracts. There's still, I saw guys that were signing from different places today, and then you've got the mini camp invites, the rookie mini camp invites. And so, to be honest with you, I've been like beating the phones trying to, like, there's still a couple guys that I think deserve to be invited to mini camp, you know, and all the different levels I've coached at. I mean, I had guys at Bemidji State that got invited to mini camps and stuff like that. I know there's guys on our team that are deserving. So talking to a couple scouts and some of the connections, what little they are that I have at that level, and I know other guys on our staff are doing the same thing. I think there's a chance. I think those things will keep trickling out here for another 2-3 days, and we certainly hope so. But he deserves it. I know that.
No, I've said a bunch. Got a lag here. I've said a bunch of times that's who I've told my son Hudson that he should play like since he set foot on the field at SDSU. He just reckless abandon and the effort. You know, that he gives and yeah, total difference maker. So I agree. I hope he does. Coach, can you take us through now? Can you explain, or are you aware of the nuances? Because there's the, you know, the UDFA contracts that come out right away. Those are priority. Then there's the mini camp invites. Do you have any insight into what that process looks like right afterwards and kind of what that difference is?
I don't have any specificity on like how they go through that. I know some of the guys I've texted and said, hey, will you look at this guy from our team, or are you guys done with mini camp invites? And that was yesterday on Sunday, and they must all been out of the office. They're like, yeah, I'll check our numbers when we get in tomorrow. So I'm sure everybody like took the day off yesterday after going through the draft, you know. But I think there's still some evaluating going on right now, because one of the guys I texted, yeah, I'll take a look at his film and see how many spots we have left and what we need positionally. So I think there's certainly, in terms of the timeline, probably reflects how they view people, you know. Like I think Garrett signed, you know, Garrett had his deal probably set up, I think, before the seventh round was over. Zach Hines texted me to let me know he was going with the Chargers before the seventh round was over. So they're starting to work those lists and those guys and kind of probably hoping they don't get drafted so they can take them as UDFAs. They're doing that before the thing's even done. And I think it's probably just a matter of trying to balance your roster positionally for those mini camps. But as far as exactly how the process works for them, I'm not sure. I do think though it's probably a little bit in order of how they view guys and that sort of thing. But
well, moving on to the upcoming season, now that we're past the back-to-back national championship season, we got all the guys in the NFL now. You will be calling plays. Can you describe the relationship along with coach? Is it Freund?
Freund.
Coming over from UND and how that'll work?
Yeah. I've known Danny since I first got into coaching, actually. I'm actually like not too far from where he's from. He's from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Oh. And so we're both kind of from similar areas. And when I was first getting into coaching, he was one of the first guys that I got put in contact with in terms of trying to, you know, get a graduate assistant job or whatever. And we kind of struck up, you know, I don't know if at that point I'd call it a friendship, but he was always super helpful to me. And it's just, you know, if you guys get the chance to get to know him and stuff, it's just absolutely nicest guy in the world. Freund, if you want to know, Freund is German for friend. Mm-hmm. At least that's what he said. So it fits. It's fitting. As far as like how that works, everybody wants to know, like, offensive coordinator, you got a co-offensive coordinator, like what is this stuff? You know, when I was at Bemidji State, you know, we had a co-offensive coordinator set up, you know, and obviously there's a play caller. And at the end of the day, that's the guy that's going to make the decision in terms of what you're going to run snap by snap. But I think the title really just reflects, you know, obviously a level of respect for the work he's done, and you know, what he brings to the table in terms of his, you know, additions to our game plan or to our menu. And I think as we get into the fall and start game planning and stuff, and I'm going to lean on him a lot in terms of, you know, helping to craft our pass game. And obviously being the guy coaching the quarterbacks, he's got a window into their mind and, you know, he's able to see things through the eyes of that position group, and obviously a guy that played quarterback at a really high level. So his role within our offense is really to coach the heck out of the quarterbacks, you know, be our expert in the pass game, and really take the lead in the game plan process in terms of, you know, looking at how can we attack a defense through the air. And then, you know, my job as the offensive coordinator is to make sure that we've got a cohesive plan, right? We're breaking tendencies. We're balanced. We're able to run the ball and throw the ball effectively out of the same formations, and make sure that it all fits together. And ultimately, we put our players in the best position to have success and get them in spots where we know they can win. So,
well, I'll tell you what, when you know, all the kind of on and off, Zach taking off and just in terms of the fan base, and I think the general sentiment, everybody was extremely excited for you to get your shot. So congratulations, coach, on that. And then, you know, to for Freund to come in, I said this, I believe at one point postseason, I don't know that I've ever heard so many universally nice things said about somebody when he came in. So I don't know, just as a fan, really pumped to see what they can do, you know, what you guys together can do, you know, for this offense to take over from obviously somebody that did a tremendous job. So foundation of any successful offense is the fat guys. Changing topics here a little bit. As Stig would call them. So can you kind of talk about the new look O-line a little bit, if you want to call it that? Because as a fan, we had many, many years where the narrative coming into every season was, oh man, we are one injury away from really struggling at the O-line. We don't have any depth. And then suddenly the last few years, obviously, no one has talked about the O-line because they're all world. Talk about that group a little bit and kind of what the thought process is coming into the season.
Yeah, I think every offensive line coach feels that way too. You know, I'm one injury away from, you know, being a really bad coach. And, you know, if you can get to the point where you have seven or eight guys that you feel really good about, you're doing a lot better than everybody else in the country. I can tell you that. And I think that's evidence. If you're on social media and you're like following recruiting right now, it's a lot of programs that are offering a lot of guys on the portal, like bringing in 3-4 a year. And that tells you that there's probably something missing in that process of, you know, whether it's recruiting, retainment, or development, there's a missing link there, you know. And not to say that you can't add a good player. Obviously John O'Brien was a huge addition for us, and, you know, what ended up being a really important piece of what we were doing up front. But you know, on the whole, you want to make sure you're bringing them into your program young and developing them. But as far as this group and you know what we did this spring, I'm really, really pleased. You know, the two positions that I probably going into the spring was the most unsure of, or was the most anxious to see where we were was O-line and tight end. And, you know, losing what we lost in terms of those three starters up front, you know, we certainly have big shoes to fill. But I feel like obviously bringing back Gus and bringing back Evan, those are guys that are 30 game starters, and have both developed into excellent players. And, you know, sometimes I think Evan kind of got, you know, maybe forgotten about in the midst of all the talk of those other guys. Evan Bernstein is a hell of a player. You know, he's turned himself into just an excellent gap scheme blocker. You know, he runs off the ball violently with our wide zone stuff. He's a hell of a puller. He's so athletic. And probably the area I'm most proud of him is just as a pass protector, his growth. You know, we were talking about two springs ago, going into the 22 season. I was nervous. You know, I did not feel very good coming out of spring ball about what was going on the right side. You know, we had kind of a triangle there of Bo and Evan and Colby were all really competing and rotating. And it was just like not very set. You know, it was just kind of like, well, we'll see how much better we can get over the summer and where we go in the fall. And then obviously we added John, and that added a level of depth. And then Evan got hurt in the fall. And, you know, we kind of bounced around lineup wise there for a couple weeks. And then we kind of settled into those two, Evan and John. But that spring 2 years ago, I mean, Evan he wasn't winning a lot one-on-one, you know. And I was worried, man, we're going to have to, like, slide to this guy all the time. Are we going to have to scheme to help him out? And he has really just turned into an outstanding pass protector. So his growth in that area has brought him along. He was always violent. You know, I always knew he was going to be a great run player. But he's really turned himself into a great player and honestly probably deserves more accolades than he's gotten over the last 2 years. So those two guys are obviously going to be our foundation and our leadership. You got Quentin Christensen, who got a ton of reps last year as a tight end.
Who is responsible for that creativity? Because that was brilliant.
It was.
Is that
brilliant.
You?
Yeah. It was North Dakota was the game that we started that. And Heinze was – or Mike Morgan's back was in rough shape. So we knew we really weren't going to have Mike Morgan for that game. And, you know, Zach has played so much football. We were just trying to get away from him taking 65 snaps a game. And then I think Kevin Brenner was out for that game too, I think, or he was limited. So we were the early part of that week. It was like, I don't know if we have enough guys to like be in 12 personnel. which against that defense is really where I want
what you need,
you know, give them double tight surfaces to the out front and, you know, there's just too many gaps for them. So I thought, well, we have a really, really good sixth lineman. Let's throw his ass out there. and it was, to be honest, the 83 thing was just like pure gamesmanship. Like, well, they're not going to see this, you know. So there's some rules about reporting that stuff. We like yep. waited until like an hour before the game. And we like slipped it into the lineup. We're like, oh, he's 83/69. And so I don't know if it worked. I don't know if they were like, whoa, who the hell's 83? Like they thought that was David Alpers because that's actually his number.
Well, it worked on us because if we had a screen grab of our text thread when that happened, it was just panic. What's going on? Who is this? I don't even know. Yeah, he hasn't put on that much weight. No, I don't think he has.
So it was total pure gamesmanship, just trying to, you know, be a little bit sly. And then after you do it one time, I mean, everybody knows who he is, right? So for the rest of the season, him being 83, it was almost like a joke, right? It was like comedic, like, oh, maybe they'll have to think about covering him. And if you watch us for like 6 weeks, like we had no intention of throwing the football at all. Like we got Zach Hines and Mike Morgan. You think we're going to throw Quinn Christian in the football? No.
Now you got
to
do it.
If I did, if I would have thrown the ball, I would have had to like explain that to Zach and Mike. Like, hey, so we're going to throw a pass to an alignment. That would not have gone over well either. So it was almost comedy by the end of the season that he was out there in 83, you know. But the great thing that it did is it stole reps. He basically played tackle for 12, 15 reps a game. You add that up over, I mean, it was week four at UND or week five. Like, you add that up over 10 weeks. That's a really valuable time for a young guy. So Quentin will slide in at one of those two tackle spots. We're kind of still, you know, he can do either. He's played left and right the whole time he's been here. And I think we've done a really good job of that with all our young guys as we've cross-trained them. Just because you don't know how the puzzle fits together till you get there, and you just never know when you're going to need to flip a guy, because the whole thing is get your five best players on the field. And if you're stuck having your seventh best guy on the field because number six can't play in a left-handed stance, then shame on you for not getting him ready. So he'll slide into one of those tackle spots. He had a great spring. Really excited about where he's at. And then, you know, just a plethora of guys at the left guard spot that have been competing. And between Ethan Vibert, who's going to be a senior for us, who has been really our backup center the last 2 years. And I'll tell you, like, Vibes would play in a lot of places at our level. You know, it's just, he happened to be behind some really good players. So Ethan had just an outstanding spring. Jalen Lee, a kid from Chicago who, 2 years ago had a horrific knee injury and has just battled his ass off to get back to being healthy. He had a nice spring and has put himself in position to compete as well. And then a young guy that really has popped up is Will Papke from Mountain Rapid. Will is going to be a great player here. He's gifted athletically. He's explosive. He's really intelligent. He's like a 28 ACT guy. And then on top of that, he's kind of a prick. So I'm sure he won't mind.
We have a type.
Too many fights during spring ball, but if there was one, there's a good chance Will was involved. So
I didn't get that impression from him, but it was good to see. He was kind of playing a little center, wasn't he, at spring game?
Well, yeah, that was mean on my part. That was not very nice of me. Jackson Kirsten, another a redshirt freshman, same class as Will, from the Chicago area, from Naperville. Jackson had been rolling as two center pretty much the whole spring, and he was doing a really nice job. And then Jackson unfortunately got dinged, little ankle injury, like practice 12. So I kind of told Will, like, hey, you're going to take some center reps. So Will, the spring game was Will's third day of his life playing center.
Jeez.
So he had no—I think he only had like two snaps that were a little high. We didn't have any on the ground, yeah. So yeah. I was pretty proud, honestly. We didn't like have a fumble or a bad exchange or anything. So that was tough. I threw him into a tough spot in the spring game, but I think it was good for him.
Yeah, I specifically went and asked him if he had ever played center before because I wasn't aware of any in his high school career, and he said, oh yeah, definitely not. So I was like, That's pretty funny.
So you mentioned the trick with the jersey. I think people want to know, you've kind of followed you're following a legacy of trick plays with Eck. Then Lujan kind of had his own tricks up his sleeve. Are you going to have some tricks up your sleeve as well? You're going to carry that on?
Yeah, I think as you look at, you know, that being a part of our offense that has been unique and I think hard to defend, I definitely believe in that philosophically. I definitely believe in having a couple tricks up your sleeve game to game. I would say this, if you look within our conference at another program or offense that has had a lot of crafty stuff, it's been North Dakota. And so I think Danny brings a lot to the table that way too. He's a really creative when it comes to play design. So I think collaboratively our offensive staff will be able to generate some cool stuff, and that'll be a part of what we do for sure.
I'm excited to see that.
When I talk about the O-line, I should mention, it just occurred to me, the other tackle spot, two guys that I expect to battle their ass off in fall camp, Colby Christensen and Marcus Hicks. And unfortunately, Marcus was out for most of the spring with an injury. So we get him healthy and rolling. Colby was out for half the spring with an injury. So those guys missed out on some development this spring, but this fall camp is going to be huge for their girls. So those two guys are going to battle. And then Kenyon Bigbo, probably the third piece over there at the other tackle spot opposite Q.
Is it just me or is Colby a really large man?
Colby's huge.
Marcus is giant.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, those two guys are not they're not bad looking kids. I mean, they look and here's the crazy thing. You want to know this? Colby Christensen has 3 years eligibility left because he came in.
Really?
Yeah, because he had the COVID year, redshirted, so he really got 2 years free there. And then this past fall doesn't count because he hurt his knee. So he med-redded. So he actually has 3 years eligibility left as like a 21-year-old. So he's like, he could be our sixth-year guy down the road. Now, that's a conversation you have later on when you get there. But
sure.
He's still, in my eyes, he's still young.
So what do you want to study in your graduate career, sir?
So you mentioned Will Backe being a little bit of a prick. Who do you see taking over the role that Mason had in terms of kind of that leader? Do you see anybody from the offensive line stepping into that role?
I think it's really Gus and Evan are going to be our two main leaders in terms of guys that have played a lot of football and have been in some big moments. And, you know, I think those two, they're certainly, from a personality standpoint, they're different than Mason. You know, Mason's, he's kind of one of one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think those two guys in their own way will you know, grab the torch and carry it. The thing I always tell our guys, if you want to lead, you got to do everything right. You know, you got to be present. You got to do everything right. You can't be a guy that is late. You can't be a guy that, you know, skips his training, you know, appointment with the trainer. You can't be a guy that gets seized. Like, you have to do everything right, because if you don't, the guys that you're supposed to lead are going to let you go, well, he doesn't do it that way. Why do I have to do it that way? And those are two guys that they do everything right. And so with that in mind, you know, they've kind of grabbed that torch and been carrying it. Now, you know, some of the stuff on the field in terms of like making calls and, you know, moving IDs and things like that, you know, that goes back to Gus. And he's more than capable, you know, and it's not like he doesn't talk up there. Like, you know, Mason gets a lot of credit, as he should, for being that guy for us. But Gus is certainly, you know, knows it and has done it too. So
that's awesome. So moving past the O-line, you are now in charge of the whole offense. So let's talk about some of the weapons that you've got coming back. Obviously, we know we've got Mark at quarterback. Can you talk a little bit about our other quarterback, Chase Mason? Everybody was excited about the splash play in the spring game. And I think he's kind of wondering, you know, are we going to try to utilize him in a few different ways? So I guess, can you shed any light on that?
Yeah, Chase, his growth through the spring has been just incredible. But I would not tell you that I'm surprised. It's exactly what I expected, what we all expected, knowing the type of talent that he was, you know, coming out of high school. Obviously, he went and played baseball for a little bit, and I just realized, like, man, I love football. I want to go play football. So getting him back in the program, getting him acclimated. Obviously, he suffered the injury last spring or two springs ago. That would have been, and that was frustrating for him for sure. So it was really, really fulfilling to see him really succeed this spring and make a lot of plays and feel comfortable within the offense. So I was like, all right, we checked that box. Like, Chase is ready to play quarterback when we need him to in this offense. On the other note, like, will he be part of this offense? He's going to be part of this offense. Am I going to tell you what we're going to do with him? Probably not going to say that on here. But he is too gifted to have him over there holding the clipboard, signaling plays in. He's too gifted to do that. Something that Coach Eck used to do going into every fall camp that I really liked, we would sit down as an offensive staff and we would put a list together of take the O-lineman out of it, take the starting quarterback out of it. Who are our top 10 best football players on offense? Who are our top 10 athletes? If you did that right now, Chase is probably in the top five. So how do you keep the guy off the field? You can't. So he's going to have a role. It's going to be fun. It's a lot of fun. We did a little bit of it this spring. It was a lot of fun. Mark's not going to come off the field.
I wanted to say that earlier when we were talking about, I don't call them gadget plays or whatever, that there are teams that do it because they are forced to do it, because they need to figure out production and they have to get sneaky. Then there are teams with an embarrassment of riches that need to do it just to get the ball in the hands of people that can do things. And what a luxury as an offensive coordinator to have the latter, right? And just to need to get the ball in people's hands. I think this year, from the little bit that you know, what everybody read and watched in the spring game, when you look at Chase, he went from looking like an elite athlete with the ball in his hands to looking like a quarterback. I don't mean that is, I often joke, Coach, that I give the world's worst quarterback analysis. So I'm very proud of that. So this is more of it. But that is, to me, what it looked like, was just he took that step. You know, he was, rusty, a few years off, whatever, came back. And now you looked at him, you're like, yeah, that dude could start at, basically 10 schools in the Missouri Valley, probably.
Yeah, and that's, you knew when we got him, like, we knew we were getting an exceptional athlete, and we knew ball in hand, like, he could do a lot of really awesome things. And you saw that this last fall. You know, he went in against Drake and, just houses a G lead and, like, nobody touches him, goes 70 yards. You know, we put him in the 2-minute drill. Again, I can't remember which game that was. That might have been actually a year ago against Butler. We put him in 2-minute drill and, like, 3rd and 8, he just takes off and, runs for a touchdown. We knew that about him, right? And so that was the great thing this spring, was to see him operate back there. And it's like, okay, that kid's going to be ready to do it. He can do it. And he's comfortable. And so you got to give a lot of credit to, obviously Coach Luan, but I think you got to give a lot of credit to Coach Freund this spring for coming in and, making him feel comfortable and helping accelerate that growth.
Moving back to our running back spot, we have Amar Johnson coming back, obviously. Can you talk a little bit about him and getting his opportunity to shine along with Angel Johnson and the development that he has shown in the last year and I'm sure this spring too, and then shed any light on any new guys we got?
Yeah, Amar has been just a phenomenal change of pace for us. I think sometimes Zay was so durable last year and really didn't have to step away very much. I think you go back to 2022. I mean, I'll never forget in the Fargo Dome that second half from Amar Johnson. And yep. Just like, mm-hmm. You knew right then, you're like, this guy is going to be so special. And in that moment, as a young player who really hadn't played that much, especially in those type of games, right, and to run as hard as he did, and make the plays that he did, I think that right away everybody knew what kind of talent he was. And so, yeah, I think he's more than ready to kind of step into that lead role and be RB1 and really, really be the tone setter for us out there. And then, Angel, he's obviously, I think everybody's seen in the moments where he's been in, he's gifted, he's got wheels. He's one of the fastest guys I think in our league, you know, and at our level, probably. He is so explosive.
He's always been my, if I could pick the get off the bus first guy, it's probably him. I say he was the first guy that walked by me. I was front row at the Iowa game 2 years ago, and he walked by, and I had no idea that dude was built like that. He is a freak athlete, isn't he?
He is. Like his growth, when he came in as a freshman, he was a receiver, guys. He was a walk-on wide receiver. And after 3 days of wide receiver, he was moved to running back. And for a kid that really didn't play in high school at all, I mean, it's such an instinctual position. You know, there's parts of that position you just can't coach into a guy. Sometimes they have it or they don't. And so, like, how rapid his development has been, and now just how his vision, and then I'm the most proud of him. This is, like, the most O-line coach thing I could ever say. He's grown so much as a pass protector. Like, oh, my gosh. The development there from a mental standpoint is really what allows you to put him on the field. You know what I mean? If you can't do that stuff, you're limited. What downs can he be out there, you know? And now he's put himself in a position where he's in every down back.
And then what do we got for new guys coming in? I guess Brandon Begeman.
Yeah, you got the guys that went through the spring. You got Begeman and you got Kirby. And those two guys had great springs. They both did. They're going to find roles, you know, whether it's on special teams or, you know, out of some of the two-back stuff, you know, playing more of an F-type position, being involved in blocking. And they'll get, you know, a fair amount of touches too for young guys, just depending on where we're at in games and stuff like that. But really excited about both those guys. They're both just physical, downhill, violent runners. And it's been fun to watch their growth, really, from the fall to the spring. And you know, you get into spring ball, you're light at that position. Those guys take a lot of reps. And so to see them go through it and get better, you know, and obviously Kirby missed the spring game with a little bit of an injury at the end. It was a little more precautionary than anything. He'll be fine. So really excited about those guys. And then obviously we signed two really dynamic kids in Maxwell and
that's right.
And our guy from Joplin down there coming up. So
We saw Maxwell twice and lost to him twice. So glad we got him. Glad he's out of high school.
Yeah, we're gonna be in a good spot at that position for a while, I think.
I like to hear that you said those guys are physical too, because it's always good to kind of have that change of pace at running back, you know, because Isaiah had more of that, and Amar was a little bit more shifty. And we've kind of had that for quite a few years, and it's been really productive for us.
Yeah, and we'll see with Maxwell and Quinn. You know, I think both those guys, they probably have skill sets that are a little more, like, very well-rounded. You know what I mean? I don't know that you fit them in one slot or the other. You know, I think they both have things about their game. You know, and sometimes you just don't know until they get here. You know what you see on tape as a high school kid, but once you get them in your offense and running your stuff, we'll see where they fit too.
I like it. So we got two more positions here to go through. I know that you got a place to be. We'll get you out of here shortly. So at tight end, tell us a little bit about, we got a bunch of young guys. We've had amazing tight ends here in the past. Who is the next great SDSU tight end or who out of a group of guys do you think that could be?
Who's your favorite child? Go.
Brody Gormley, I'm putting money on
it. It's hard. I mean, you got to remember, like, some of these guys I recruited when I was a tight end coach, and then, you know, two of them are from my area too, so they're all kind of like my, you know, it's hard to overpraise one or the other. I don't want to make anybody feel jealous, but no, they're tough, gritty kids. You know, really, I think you look at. I'll start with Kevin Brenner coming back. I think we kind of forget to talk about him because he was out all spring because he had surgery. You know, Kevin Brenner is going to be the veteran voice in that room, and a guy who has a very important role. He's, you know, Kevin's a true fullback, you know, and there's a place for that in our offense. If you guys have watched us over the last 4 years, we, you know, between Mike Morgan and you even go back to, you know, before I got here, like Luke Sellers. I remember when I got here and I was watching tape from like 18-19. I was like, I love that guy. Mm-hmm. That guy's like my favorite player. So I think that job is still important in our offense, and Kevin's going to do a great job there. But you look at these young guys, I mean, really all four of them that took a bulk of the reps this spring are going to have a shot to really contribute and make plays. So the two big guys, Davin Stoffel and Brody Gormley, I mean, those guys are the true prototype Y bodies. They're both just super gifted athletically, fluid, you know, just can stretch vertically. And then the thing I think that we've gotten figured out here recruiting and evaluating tight ends is you got to have that when you recruit these guys. And I think, you know, a lot of people make the mistake. They're looking for like the mauling blocker coming out of high school. And I think the thing we've learned is, you know, I'm an O-line guy, right? And I knew that when I was a tight end coach. I know my strengths, right? Coach Myers, his background is O-line. Okay. So between the two of us, we better be able to teach a kid how to block, or I don't know what we're doing here, right? So when we recruit tight ends, like what can we probably not teach a kid to do as well? I can't teach them to run fast, right? Ball skills are one of those things. Like if you didn't play catch with your dad as a kid, it's too late when you are 19 and you're going to college. Like if you can't catch a football by then, no one's going to teach you how to do it. So can they run? Do they have body control? Are they explosive? Can they catch a football? And those guys could all do it. It was just a matter of, all right, we got to get the weight on them, and they got to have a willingness to be physical and put their face on people. And those two have done that. They've shown that, and they've grown a lot in that area. So I'm super excited about both those guys. You're going to be seeing them for a while here. And they're the next two, like, you know, maybe like the Twin Towers out there running around in havoc. And they're just super kids. And then you've got, you know, Grayton Gannon, a kid from southern Wisconsin, not too far from where I'm sitting right now. Grayton's a different body type. He's, you know, 6'3", 235, and he's more of a move guy or a guy that can play in the slot. He's got a ton of position flexibility. You know, Grayton had a phenomenal spring last spring. Zach Hines and Mike Morgan were out. You know, they had postseason stuff that they had to get worked on, so they really missed a lot of spring ball before last season, and Grayton took a ton of reps, and we got really excited seeing him make plays in the spring and grow at a rapid pace. And so Grayton missed some time this spring with an injury of his own. He's going to be fine. It was more precautionary than anything, but he'll certainly have a role as you know, kind of a move guy and have some position flexibility. And then, you know, you got Joey Newman, young man from Chicagoland area, who's been getting better every single day. And he kind of fits that a similar mold to, you know, what Grayton can do as far as a, more of an H-back type player. So, you know, I'm excited just about the balance in that room. We have guys that have different skill sets, guys that have different body types. We will be green. We will be young there. But, man, we're going to be talented. We're going to be so talented. And they're going to have their moments like they all do, right? They're going to have their times where we got to coach them through stuff. But it's there, and we saw it this spring, so really fired up.
Last but not least, we got the wide receiver group. Obviously, we've got the Wildebeest coming back. Yeah. We've got Graham Goring coming back. Kentrell Prejean flashed a little bit in the spring game.
A little bit.
Okay, a lot of bit.
Dude, a lot bit. What else do we talk about after that?
That's Kentrell true.
Is it Prejean or Prejean?
Is it Prejean or Prejean?
I say Prejean, but you know, like
that's what one of
I haven't gone up to and asked him like how do I say it? He has not corrected me, so and he's such a nice kid. I don't think he would. But
so yeah, tell us a little bit about that position group and who we can look forward to seeing out there this year.
Yeah, I think everybody saw early in the year last year, like the Montana State game. You saw Graham and Griff pop off, you know, and really that drive to win the game. They both made huge plays. You know, Graham caught the fade ball up the sideline, and then Griff caught the screen, and it was like, oh, those guys are going to be okay. And so, you know, we've seen their growth throughout the last fall, and unfortunately, Graham kind of got dinged up for spring ball and didn't participate much. But we know what we got there. Graham's got obviously great size and hands, and really has the ability to stretch the field vertically. Griff is obviously a super talented player, and both those guys kind of hold the down outside for us. Are going to be really important. You know, Trell, like he's going to be one of those guys who just has such a cool story He was like a late signee or a guy that we found like right at the bitter end in that class, like found him on Twitter, and somehow he had nothing going on just because he's not that big of a kid and from all the way down there. And I don't know if there's a guy on our team that loves football more than Kentrell, like loves practice, loves being out there with everybody. He football is just, it's his favorite thing to do, you know? And even some of those mornings where you can tell the guys are, you know, we had a stretch of spring ball there at the end that last week. We had like four practices in 5 days, you know, just coming off of the holiday weekend and having to fit it in before finals and stuff. And you could tell in some of those times, right, the guys are a little tired or you know, they're fighting through it. Not him, man. He's just out there, just a ball of energy, always a smile on his face. So he's a super kid, and obviously he is twitchy. He's explosive. He's got all that stuff, right? He's just not the tallest guy, but that's okay. And he's got tremendous vertical speed. So really excited to see, you know, him grow into that role and, you know, playing in the slot, playing outside, kind of wherever we need him, getting him in motion with some of the jet stuff. I think he's got a knack for those things. And so he'll definitely have a big role. And then, you know, another guy that I thought really came on, you know, towards the back half of the spring is Elijah Irvin, young man that transferred from Snow College out in Utah and was had to do a year in residence last year. So he wasn't eligible to compete. But he was over on the scout team, and our defensive coaches kept telling us every week, man, this kid is going to be good. He's gifted. And so he made some big strides this spring. And just if he can just keep doing that with consistency, I think he's going to be a guy that can help us out there as well. So.
Awesome. Well, any final questions for Coach here from Dallas or Chad?
Need to keep you for –
I was gonna say he's out on the trail trying to find the next great Jackrabbit. So we know you got places to be. We really appreciate you hopping on. I'm sure the Jackrabbit faithful, for those that don't know you yet, they're gonna love to get to know you as now the offensive coordinator. And so thank you so much for hopping on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on. Appreciate what you guys do covering our program, and obviously appreciate everybody watching and our fan base. This is just haven't been at a lot of different programs, early in my career and bouncing around. This is, you know, everybody wants to say it, it sounds cliche, but this is a unique place, special. The type of support we get from the community, from our alumni, from our fans. I hope everybody knows our players thrive off of it. They thrive off of it. Walking out there and seeing 20,000 people in the stands on Saturday, it means something to them. And so I hope everybody knows that. And if we can continue to do that every Saturday, people are not going to want to play us at home. I can tell you that.
Well, I, for one, cannot wait to go down and make a whole lot of Oklahoma State fans really sad. So
we're looking forward to that, too.
Cool. Thanks, Coach.
Perfect. Right. Thank you very much. Awesome. So.
Nice. That was fun.
Yeah.
I like him.
Love having him on. Great insights. Appreciate everything that he was able to tell us. Obviously, there were some things he wasn't going to say. I had to ask it anyway. But
I liked his answer, though.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll beat around that bush.
Right? But yeah, I mean, so the impact that he was talking about that fans make, I don't know Chad and I were there. Dallas wasn't able to make it. But the scholarship auction on Saturday, if you didn't see it, raised $2.38 million in one night.
What raised that much? Everything?
Well, I mean,
was there
a private island that you could have that they auctioned off. That was,
how much
that
did the big things go
the whole
for?
Island.
It was time at a private island, right?
Like, yeah.
I mean, you don't own it.
The big things, there. You know, they were, it's, you know, there was
like, what did the private jet, what did the private jet to Stillwater go for?
That was quite a bit. I don't remember.
Yeah, I want to say there was the set of four went for like, I don't know, maybe 10 grand or something like that.
Yeah.
Some of the big items were going for 30, 40, 50 grand. And so they were just popping off, and all the silent auction items, like last year, I felt like I got a steal on a couple things, but this year there were no steals to be had. People were bidding like crazy. The amount of support for this program right now is unreal. And like Coach Olson said, just the difference that the Jacks fans make by showing up to games. You know, we got a back-to-back national championship program. We should have a sold-out stadium every single week next year.
Agreed.
So if you obviously, you know, we're probably preaching to the choir for our listeners, but continue to bring friends to games. It's infectious, contagious. You know, when people come check it out, they really like it. So don't stop that. But I just had to mention the scholarship auction. The Bold and Blue programs announced that they made over $600 million with I think they had a $500 million goal. And so overshot that by $100 million, which is unreal. Just the amount of momentum in this program is incredible right now.
Hold on.
I was putting it up there. I'm sorry.
Hold on. No, does he know that you texted that?
I don't think so. Some lady told me she bought it. I can't remember what she bought it for, but
lies.
She told me what she was trying to get it for, and that's the only number I remember. And then when I asked her what she got it for, she said, "Oh, way too much."
Yeah. So Adam asked how much did the Frost section PP sign go for? I'm not sure how much it went for, but I tried to get one of those scoreboards because they were cool. They ended up going for like $4,000. It was just crazy what everything's going for. But outside of that, what else do we need to talk about? Obviously, you mentioned the Oklahoma State game coming up. Hopefully, we get a bunch of Jacks fans going down for that. There's plenty of us to drive all the way to Frisco. You might as well drive to Oklahoma State. It's not that far compared to Frisco.
No. Not terrible. Hold on. Let's go back. There's a couple of questions here that were very tactical that I think maybe are worth touching on, or at least discussing when we will come back and start talking more football specific stuff. So we got Matt K. When do you think Missouri Valley Conference will be just as strong or better this year? I mean, in general, I don't know. One, we obviously need to start doing at some point during the summer, we'll start leading in like we did last year with some conference previews and overall FCS previews and probably even get a little bigger than we did last year. In general, like, it's going to be strong. Without getting too much into it, I don't know. I honestly think both of the Dakota U's are going to be down. UND is already a dumpster fire. I don't know if anybody listening has eligibility, you might want to send your resume up to University of North Dakota, and you probably can get yourself a helmet because they're out of players and I don't know what they're going to do. So it's really not a good situation for those guys. It sucks. Cause I don't hate that program. I have no animosity, but they're in a bad spot. And then USD, I have said multiple times, I called going into last season, they were picked towards the bottom of the conference. I said they were going to host and win a playoff game, and I was right. And this year, I believe the opposite. I think they're not going to be that good. I just think last year was a product of their schedule and how things worked out. They're not going to be a terrible team, but they're not going to be a great team. Beyond that, I don't know. We get rid of the Leathernecks, thank goodness, but traded for Murray State. I think, as much as I don't like it, the Furry Cows, I think, are going to be real good this year. They just lost their top receiver to the portal, so that hurts, and that's a whole other conversation. I don't know. You guys, I don't want to get too in-depth into this. You guys got anything else?
I just think there's going to be more parity below the top couple of teams. Kind of like what we saw last year, except for maybe not a clear-cut third, right?
So the whole FCS to me this year, it's going to be, I actually take this with a grain of salt. Montana, South Dakota State, North Dakota State.
I know.
Wide gap. Montana State, Idaho. Wider gap. Take your pick. The field. And I don't think that, I mean, to me, if anybody knocks off anybody in the top three other than those three I mentioned, I'll be shocked. So you're right on the parity with the field, Chad.
So Patrick out there in Big Skylands, how we feel about NDSU? Well, I do know that they lost one of their best receivers today. That's news noteworthy. I don't know if you guys have any other comments on that.
No, I mean, the portal's brutal. Carter says here you almost have to wait until the portal settles down, and it's true. There's a lot of attrition going on in the FCS right now, both up and back down. And so teams are going to look different, and it's tougher to gauge year to year now what teams are going to look like, just because there is so much turnover and change in rosters. So, it's going to be interesting to see. But yeah, I agree with Dallas. I think Montana, SDSU, NDSU are going to be at the top, and then we'll have a pretty big gap. But we'll see about that. Let's see, what else do we got here? One other one I was going to address.
Adam, you hold that question and ask Brendan about that when he's on live on the podcast. That's a Brendan answer there.
We will do more, plenty of MVFC talk. We'll talk about the big seeding news in the playoffs. They're going to seed 16 teams now, which is awesome. We'll talk about the implications of that as we get closer to the season. We don't want to talk about everything tonight. We wanted to hop on, talk about the spring game a little bit, talk with Coach Olson, talk about the NFL draft, go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. So three people asked how many years of eligibility Chase has left.
Four now.
Yeah. What?
Four people.
Oh, four now? Sorry. All right. No. Four now. All right. So that was, I wish we would have called that out. So to the best of my knowledge, it is three counting this year, correct?
Should be right. Yep.
Okay. So yes, he does. He has three left. So you've got this year, obviously, with Mark, there's all of the rumors and speculation, whatever. Nobody knows what Mark's going to do. Mark hopefully has two left, but the bare minimum Chase would have would be one after Mark was done and had no years left.
Right. Yep. If he came back for two.
Correct.
Mark, that is.
Yep.
So just hold your breath. If you have players on your team that you really like and you're afraid of going anywhere, just hold your breath until, you know, the first.
Yeah, so the graduate transfer portal closes on the first. I forget what time it is on the first, but we'll be obviously keeping our eye on that. Brian asked, did Brendan get kicked out 100%. For shaving off his beard? 100%. Yes. No.
The boss made him do that.
He's got a new child at home, and he's busy with his daughter, his new daughter. So congrats to Brendan and Ariel on that. But anything else do we need to address for now?
I don't know. Thanks to Kubota for signing on to be our title sponsor for yet another year. Talked to John Colley at the scholarship auction, and he said, "You guys, I want to do it again." So thanks to all the Kubota dealers in South Dakota. If you need to get yourself a side-by-side, a skid steer, a full tractor, a mini tractor, I guess they call them compact tractors, you know.
One of each.
No further than your area Kubota dealer. It's north. They're all over. So we got quite a few. What, eight now, I think, in South Dakota?
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else. I'm sorry I was late, guys. I had every computer problem imaginable. So it's call it off-season problems, I guess. But this is I've missed this. I'm very happy to be back. I've missed you guys.
Yeah, it's too bad you weren't able to get to the scholarship auction. We had a ton of fun there and would have enjoyed having you there as well.
Yeah, you'll have to get there next time.
Agreed. We had kid football stuff.
Yep. Nope. Understandable.
That'll happen. Well, thanks everybody for hopping on. We appreciate it. We had there's 630 of you watching right now, which is just insane. Appreciate everybody for stopping by. Definitely like and subscribe to the FCS Fans Nation channel. Follow Jackrabbit Illustrated on Twitter, Facebook. You can see our individual handles on here too. So give us a follow. No shotguns.
I know this is.
I can go get a Busch Light.
I can, but
I don't have.
Finish our drink.
We'll just finish what we have. I don't have cans of anything in the fridge. So,
as we always say, go big, go blue,
go Jacks,
go Jacks.